Welcome back to the Punt Return. What a week it has been in NFL football. Ryan Lepore, after 3 weeks, we have three unbeaten teams, four winless teams. The standings are starting to take shape. Mate, how are you feeling 3 weeks into the new season?
Yeah, mate, it's certainly starting to take shape, isn't it? And we're definitely starting to get an idea of who's who in the zoo and which teams are complete flops. And I look forward to discussing those with you as we get into the power rankings, which you've carried this week. So very interested to see the rises and the falls, the big falls in particular. And yeah, looking forward to chatting all things NFL and in what's a big week. And I know you can't see me at the moment, listeners, but I've got my Collingwood scarf draped around me, and very exciting week, especially in Melbourne town, as we head into the AFL Grand Final in a couple of days.
Well, and don't forget in Sydney town with the NRL Grand Final too. I think for both Aussie football codes, that the two best teams are in the decider, which doesn't happen that often, I don't think. And yeah, it's going to be a massive weekend for Aussie footy, obviously. But we can have that conversation all day, every day. But we only get to talk NFL. We only get to talk NFL once a week. So you mentioned the power rankings, and we will get into that a little bit later. But there are some big movers now. We're 3 weeks in, and I think, as I said at the top, we are starting to get a bit more of a sense of, you know, who's legit, who's a contender, who's a pretender, and like you said, who's who in the zoo, and we'll get to those a little bit later on. But there have been some big swings in the power rankings this week. But before we get to that, week three, we spoke preseason about the Minnesota Vikings and their trend last season of winning those really close games, the comebacks, the one possession, one score games, etc. They went 11-0 in 2022. They're 0-3 in one possession games. And the regression is fast. The regression is painful. I don't necessarily think they've been so bad. I don't think they've been that bad. But the reality is that they're 0-3. And history says you are very, very unlikely to make the playoffs starting 0-3. Of the 158 teams that started 0-3 between 1990 and 2022, only four managed to get in the postseason. Only one 0-3 team has won a playoff game, and no team has reached the Super Bowl after starting 0-3. Ryan, what do you think of the Vikings?
As much as those stats say that their season is done, I think it's very slightly ajar for the fact that they are in the NFC, of course. They are, a streaky team that can get on a run, and we saw their luck, kind of ride their luck last year. Obviously, it's been a different story to start this season. I don't think, like you said, they're a bad football team, and their concern for me is obviously the passing defense and that secondary, and, well, this is the defense in general, really. They can't get any pressures on opposition quarterbacks. They can't turn the ball over. They're getting, I don't know what their differential in turnovers is, but it would have to be one of the worst in the league, if not the worst. I'll try and quickly find that, because I'm very interested to know, because again, they were their own worst enemy on the weekend, and you know, continually turned the ball over, left a lot of points out there against the Chargers, and ultimately it cost them the game. And I know, actually, yeah, there you go. They're taken away two and given away nine, which is a league-leading mark at nine turnovers. But yeah, the Vikings, to give away nine turnovers through the first three games is simply not good enough, and is the reason why they haven't won a game. They've got another winless team this week in the Panthers, who, you know, have showed signs of life in, you know, they certainly showed they could put up some points last week against the Seahawks, but again, they're not the complete package yet, and they're going to struggle, we know, this season. So it's a great opportunity for the Vikings. Yes, they're on the road, but they need to go into Carolina, have a big win, and potentially get their season back on track. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom yet for the Vikings, but obviously one more loss this week, and I think the nail's in the coffin. But at 0-3, the stats are against them, but I think they're just a flicker of hope there for the Minnesota Vikings.
There are some super weird anomalies out of this Vikings team. I think last year, you know, we spoke about it preseason. They, what were they, 14-3? 13-4, and you know, they had a minus 3 points differential for a team with that win-loss record. I think they were 29th in overall DVOA, which was phenomenal. That a team that was, you know, fourth or fifth in the overall standings was third last, fourth last in efficiency across the board. And this year, you know, they're 0-3 and they're only a minus 13 points differential when you compare that to the, I guess, the situation, the landscape last season. But they've moved up in DVOA. I think they're 20th or 19th or something in overall DVOA, which is pretty kind of incredible little quirk of the way that the Vikings have set up and the way that, you know, like we spoke about, they got incredibly lucky in a lot of situations last season, and the luck just hasn't fallen their way this season, and some of it's their own doing, of course. I think you're right that it doesn't necessarily mean their season is done. They're not quite cooked just yet, but so much of it is going to come down to the next month. Like you said, got the Panthers up next, the Chiefs, and then the Bears. So thinking that they're going to win two out of the next three with the Panthers and the Bears. Then you've got the Niners and the Packers, both of which are playing pretty good football at the moment, and they're going to be tough to beat for the Vikings. So much is going to come down to the next 4 and 5 weeks. But if they're staring at a 2-5 or 2-6 hole, that's going to be a really tough mountain for them to climb in the second half, I would imagine.
Yeah, oh, completely. And look, without knowing their schedule, and I'm glad you kind of mentioned it, because it certainly, obviously, as you mentioned, they have to win at least two of the next three games. If not, try and win them all. Obviously, they'll be doing their best to do so. But I mean, it's a hard task against the Chiefs. I assume it's in Minnesota, that one. I could be wrong, but yeah, if it's in Minnesota, they're a puncher's chance. You know, they're obviously a super talented team on offense. They still have the best wide receiver in the game, if not the best offensive player in the game. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, Kirk Cousins has not been targeting him enough in the red zone, and yet to get a touchdown this season, Justin Jefferson, but he's still putting up ridiculous numbers. And we saw Alexander Mattinson bounce back after a really poor week two, and he kind of got back to where he was and where many people thought he would be this season. And then they've obviously acquired Cam Akers. So there's enough talent there on offense. Like I said, I think the concern for them is on defense. And, you know, maybe they just need an easy kill this week against the Panthers, which, you know, funnier things have happened. You know, it could be the team that comes out and scorches them. And
yeah,
Adam Thielen, who's having an unbelievable season at the Panthers, could be come back to haunt his old team.
Well, I just want to remind you that you told me last week that Seahawks Panthers game was nothing to watch. You said, I think it was a shit game and didn't want anything to do with it. But you, speaking of teams,
well, look what happens when Big Red gets thrown into the game. He always is interesting to watch, Andy Dalton, because he does sling the ball around, and he's not a bad quarterback. He's not. Like, he gets the job done, doesn't he?
I mean, anyone who's been in the league and played as many games and thrown as many touchdowns as Andy Dalton has, you know, is decent. And I know he's obviously at the end of his career, but guy can play. Guy has been a baller for a long time. And, you know, they could do worse. They could do worse and play Andy Dalton. But, yeah, I think you're right. In terms of the Vikings, you know, defense is certainly an issue. And moving on to a team that I think defense is the least of their issues at the moment. Your Buffalo Bills, Ryan, they are back. They are back in a big, big way. Their defense, 7 sacks, 4 interceptions, beat down on the Washington Commanders in the Ryan Lepore Cup on Monday morning. And I think really now, I think you've mentioned it a couple of times, but the Bills, everything's kind of clicking except Josh Allen. And I think all they need to do is get Josh Allen back to being 75% of the superstar that we know he can be, and the Bills are almost Super Bowl favorites.
Yeah, look, they have all the makings, don't they? And that's probably the concern at the moment. And you know, dissimilar to what we just said about the Vikings, it's all about that defense, and that's humming and that's clicking along. And they were unbelievable again on the weekend against Washington, who, you know, were 2-0. That looked quite good. You know, again, without being spectacular, they'd look pretty solid to start the season. We saw their kind of offensive firepower against the Broncos the week earlier, but the Bills completely shut that down in the first quarter. There was, I don't know how many sacks in the first quarter, at least 2 or 3, and then obviously a couple of interceptions and a fumble recovery. So it was just all on the line there for the Bills at the start of that game. And yeah, look, I think the only issue at the moment, like you said, is Josh Allen, and that Buffalo offense isn't quite clicking again. They've had issues in the red zone. Tyler Bass had to, I don't know how many field goals he put up this week, but it was quite a few. They had to settle for 3 points instead of 7, of course, which is, you know, not what you want, especially in playoffs, and that's going to be the concern for the Bills, is if they can convert those red zone opportunities, because I feel like they're always kind of solid when they get to that point, but then they have stumbled over the last couple of seasons. And as you mentioned, there's just probably not that quite, you know, chemistry or clicking yet with the Bills offense, but there's obviously a lot of room to work with. And, you know, they're going to have to get it into gear pretty quick, because it could be a track meet in Buffalo on Sunday with the Miami Dolphins coming to town. They're going to need at least four touchdowns to win that game, I think. And, you know, they're going to need at least probably, 28 to 30 points just to beat the Dolphins this week. And, can't wait for that one. It's clearly got match of the round circled right around it in week four. But I think with that defense, it's going to be a really big challenge for the Dolphins, because they haven't played a defense like that yet.
100%. I mean, this is as big a challenge as much as it is for the Bills offense to kick into gear. It's as much of a challenge for the Dolphins high-powered offense to keep it rolling against this defense. I mean, you look at some of the names here. I mean, Ed Oliver, who's been in the league now for four or five years since being drafted out of Houston. Guy's just becoming a beast. He had a sack and a half. Leonard Floyd had two sacks. I mean, how much of a bargain has Leonard Floyd become for Buffalo? I mean, he's been a very good player for a long time. And I thought that he was going to be a good pickup for Buffalo. But you know, what he offers the Bills when you put him into that unit, and he's come from a very good defensive unit, obviously, but you put him into this unit that is potentially even more dynamic and balanced and even across the board. Like, this Bills D is just so hard to beat. And it doesn't matter if you're throwing the ball, if you're running the ball, it just doesn't matter. They can beat you in so many ways. And it's certainly going to be the biggest test of the Dolphins offense this week. And I'm really kind of intrigued to see how that plays out. But just in terms of your concern on Josh Allen, I think the guy's too good to be this average for too much longer. We've seen him do it over a period of time he's going to turn it around because he's too good not to. And even if it's just, you know, with his legs to kind of kickstart things, and then, you know, he gets the arm into it because his arm's too good. He's got a cannon and he's got good receivers. So it will turn around for Josh Allen, I'm sure. And you know, wouldn't surprise me if by mid-season again that he's back in those kind of MVP conversations, because he's that good and will be that good again. Speaking of Miami, that offense, 726 total yards of offense, and Tyreek Hill only had 157 of those yards. That was a demolition of Denver. It was just the fourth 70-plus point game in NFL history, and just the first since 1966. That was pretty special.
It was amazing to watch as a fan and as a lover of football. I mean, it's not often you get treated to those kind of score lines, and obviously we saw, you know, the Chiefs went a different kind of approach as soon as they kind of got to that 41-0 or whatever they were up, you know, very early in the third quarter. I mean, that could have gone anyway, but we saw Andy Reid put in Blaine Gabbert and pull Pat Mahomes and things like that. I love that Mike McDaniel left his offense out there and just let them run all over that Broncos defense. I thought that was just such a cool thing to do. And you know, it's a very Mike McDaniel thing to do. He's a bit of a different cat. He's got his own kind of unique kind of ways of looking at sport and obviously in football and things like that. But he's such a unique character, and I love that he kind of left it all out there and wanted to keep the starters out there to kind of run it up and treat the crowd to an unbelievable scoreline. It's not something I've ever seen in my lifetime, and I know you've got some stats to run me through, but goodness me. I mean, that was incredible, and like you said, they've just been being on a heater so far in the first 3 weeks. Tua's clearly the MVP favorite, you'd think, if he's not in the markets. You'd be sure to be trying to snap up those odds. And then, of course, Raheem Mostert, the second coming of him, and then the rookie, Devon.
Is it Achain?
Achain? Yeah, anyway, there was a lot of hype around him over the preseason because of, obviously, again, his pure speed. And, you know, and we saw it firsthand. It was pretty much his first offensive snaps of the year, and he just went absolutely apeshit. So, over 230 yards four touchdowns or something he got. Like, it's just ridiculous stat line. And, of course, Jalen Waddle didn't even play on the weekend.
It's just amazing. Like, it's just amazing what they're able to do. And I think it's a really good point that you make about keeping the starters in when you're that far ahead. And I guess a bit like you, I was really happy to see it happen because it doesn't happen. And you know, the Chiefs are a really, really good franchise. They make smart decisions. They do clever things because they're a really good football franchise. The Miami Dolphins are not quite at that level yet. And I think this was potentially, I don't know, while I love to see it and it made me happy and it was exciting and it was cool. Part of me feels like this is a little bit of the evolution of Miami and just showing that they're still a little bit immature in that regard. Because, I mean, what would we be saying now if they're 40-0 up or whatever it was and Tua gets a head knock again and misses the next 6 weeks because he got hit in the third quarter or whatever, when you know game was over and they're just running up the score. Look, like I said, I loved it, but I am in kind of two minds about the usefulness of it and whether the Dolphins, I certainly think they're a contender, but if you had to put right now the Dolphins' best against the Chiefs' best or the Eagles' best or potentially even the Cowboys' best right now, just because I feel like they're potentially a little bit more mature in that journey and I don't know. I'm split, but I certainly think that Miami, you know, obviously if they keep this up, they're going to be thereabouts at the pointy end of the season. That was pretty special to watch. And as someone who has Raheem Mostert in both my fantasy leagues, I was pretty happy with that. But super fun to watch. And this Denver team is one that I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later on. But I was really bullish on Sean Payton coming in, not as the Messiah, but you know, someone who was going to be able to make changes and have an impact really quickly. And clearly, that hasn't happened, at least from a result standpoint. And they've been a very, very hard watch. It must be incredibly tough for a Broncos fan to be watching this kind of train wreck happen in reality after the hype of the off season.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think, to be honest, it hasn't been the offense. I mean, I know Sean Payton is an offensive minded coach, but he's obviously got control over the whole franchise. But that defense has been so bad, especially on paper. It looks strong. We knew last season it was their only saving grace, and they wouldn't have won any games. I don't think if it wasn't there without their defense last year. I mean, they barely scored. They had the worst points per game in the league last year. They won a lot of close and low scoring games thanks to their defense last year, but it's been completely on the other end of the spectrum this season. And thank goodness they've got Chicago this week, because it gives them a really good yardstick to see where they're at. Because if they don't beat Chicago by double digits and do what they need to, the question marks, the knives, the pitchforks and everything else is going to be out for Sean Payton. I mean, I know it's only four games into his career, it will be after Sunday, but goodness me, if they lose to the hapless Bears, who don't look like firing a shot and winning a game all season, like I said, things will be getting very, very hot in Denver indeed. But, you know, that rushing defense has been an absolute disgrace to start the season. I mean, we saw Brian Robinson have his way with them in that second half, in particular against Denver last week when they played Washington. We saw the Raiders, kind of, who we know have looked pretty ordinary in the last two games, come out and beat them in their own own stadium in week one, and then they've somehow allowed almost 350 yards rushing for a team that's no good at rushing, apparently. And then, of course, yeah, to give up 70 points, it's just mind-boggling. So, yeah, look, they're most since 2000, those rush yards, and the third most, in franchise history. So it was a dark day for Denver. And, if they can't win this week, I really don't know where to for Denver, because they've got they've got Kansas City and Buffalo coming up shortly.
Oh, yeah, tough stretch. Tough stretch. Speaking of a good stretch, though, the Cleveland Browns over the next couple of weeks have the Ravens and the Niners, which obviously, you know, that's a couple of tough games. But after that, they've got Indy, Seattle, Arizona, and then Baltimore and Pittsburgh again. They can do some damage, I think, if things keep going the way they're going defensively for Cleveland. And I think it's time. Yeah, we've spoken a number of times over the last month or so since our preseason episode on some of the best defensive players in the league, and, you know, TJ Watt and Micah Parsons last week we spoke about, and a bunch of these guys, Nick Bosa. Miles Garrett is the heartbeat of this Browns franchise, 3.5 sacks from 5 tackles. And legitimately, Miles Garrett is the single reason Ryan Tannehill couldn't get anything going for Tennessee. And that very, very ugly Tennessee Titans offense, 94 yards of total offense against the Cleveland Browns last week. Miles Garrett is legitimately a superstar in the NFL. What's your take on the Browns defense?
Well, at the moment, they're the best in the league. And I know it's hard to kind of say that, especially after the, you know, how much we were wrapping up Dallas last week. And we know how strong that Dallas defense is. But just by sheer numbers, the Cleveland Browns are the best defense in the league by a long way at the moment. And I know they're not dominating the turnover game, but they are allowing a miserly 163 yards per game in total. Mm. That's total yards, not just on the ground. 52 rushing yards they're allowing per game. They stopped Derrick Henry to a complete halt last week. And like you mentioned, they just got nothing going. They completely shut out the Bengals in week one. We saw they had a pretty ordinary day on offense in week two, which cost them the game. It certainly wasn't anything to do with that defense, who gave all kinds of troubles to Kenny Pickett and the Steelers. But that defense is genuinely legit. They're 90 yards better than the next best defense in the league at the moment, which is the Buffalo Bills. So, and not to mention 10.7 points per game allowed, by far the best. They are scary good on defense. And the major concern for me and what it is for Dallas is the offense. And I still trust Dak Prescott on that that Dallas offense a lot more than I do the Browns. And that's where I've got, I suppose we'll get to it in a little bit later in the show. We've got a new segment for you, all you listeners. But as much as I don't want to say I'm sold on the Browns, because I'm not quite.
You can't be. It's impossible to be sold on them.
No, they're bloody good. They're bloody good. And look, they're going to go. Yeah, next couple of weeks, as you mentioned, are going to be very interesting before they get a bit of a easier run. But they're right in the conversation to win that division this year, of course. So the bare minimum they have to be aiming for with a start like this is a wild card spot, but they should be daring to dream and to win that division.
Well, looking at that schedule, I mean, you expect that they'll probably lose one of the Baltimore-San Francisco games, and then you'd think, all things being equal, they beat the Colts, they beat the Seahawks, they beat the Cardinals. If they go 4-1 over the next – sorry, 4-1 over the next kind of 5 weeks – that gives them a 6-2 start. That's a real solid launch pad for a playoff run, as long as they keep it up. And again, one of the things that we spoke about during the preseason episodes was, you know, the Browns could be 6-2, 7-3, 8-2, etc. But you're never quite sold because it's the Browns. And as we know, the Browns are going to brown, and they have the ability to just shit the bed at any moment. I shudder to think what would happen if they lost Miles Garrett. I mean, can that defense hold up without him? Who knows? Offensively, we know that that's not where their firepower is, but you're right, they're the best defense in the league. And yeah, they've got one of the best few defensive players in the league. So if something happened to him, then maybe it all falls apart. But, you know, right now they are the best defensive unit in the NFL, and really positive times for Cleveland, especially if they can keep stepping up offensively, you know, getting Deshaun Watson more involved, Amari Cooper, and a bunch of these other guys Kareem Hunt back in Cleveland, which we spoke about last week. One of those things that we spoke about, what that running back situation looked like in Cleveland. And then about 12 hours later, before we got the episode up, Hunt had signed back in Cleveland. But yeah, interesting times. But I think it is time that we put some respect on Myles Garrett and have him in that conversation with the TJ Watt, the Nick Boses, the Micah Parsons, etc. of the league. Because he's right up there and he's proving it week after week. Speaking of proving it, this is certainly not a proving it moment, but I want to ask you, did the Cardinals crack the Cowboys code a little bit? I know it sounds, when you look at it in totality and you try and, I don't know, bubble it down into a couple of sentences, against the Cowboys, you've got to absorb pressure and then hit them on the counterattack. You got to punch them in the face. But when you got the ball, you got to take care of it. No turnovers. And you've got to be efficient on offense. And I know it all sounds really, really easy, but that is exactly what the Arizona Cardinals did against Dallas and their vaunted defense last week.
Yeah, look, it was such an interesting kind of game. And you thought, all right, good run by Arizona. They're hanging on. They're going to get beaten last kind of quarter, last minute, whatever. But to their credit, they just fought them off, didn't they? And then obviously that interception in the end zone just crowned it off. And there's another kind of black mark against Dak Prescott and shown, again, those interceptions are going to be so costly in the long run for Dallas. And it's a game they should not have lost. I mean, they went in as, what, a couple touchdown favorites, if not more. It's a big line and the shortest priced team of the whole week. And yeah, I don't know. Dallas have been, you know, better over the last couple of years in terms of trusting them, winning these games that they're supposed to. But that was a really bad day for Dallas. And, Josh Dobbs, who, essentially is a veteran quarterback, journeyman that's barely played in this league. And he's looked pretty solid over the first 3 weeks. And not that he cut him up, the Dallas defense up, but James Conner, who's had an underrated season, he's looking like a pro bowler so far to start the season. But they've been quite competitive in all their games, the Cardinals, and they could have easily been 3-0, if you can believe it or not. So, what did you kind of see that they did against the Dallas offense or the Dallas defense in that matter to kind of control that game? But it was a surprising one, that's for sure.
Oh, super surprised. I think you messaged me about halfway through the third quarter, maybe towards the end of the third quarter, start of the last, and it was just like, oh my god, Arizona. And I was like, yeah, come on, let's fucking go. But it sounds so simple, but there was no reinventing the wheel. It's run the ball, it's be efficient, it's get the first down, it's move the chains. It was nothing flashy, like you said. Josh Dobbs certainly didn't cut them up, but you know what he did with the ball was just take care of it. No turnovers, no interceptions. They took advantage of their opportunities, and that's exactly what you got to do. You know, Dallas had the ball for longer. They had more plays, more opportunities to score, and they just couldn't do it. They just couldn't do it. And when Arizona had the chance, they took the chance, and like you said, just kind of finished it off with that that interception late in the game to ice it. But super interesting for the state of the NFC, because you would think that, you know, the Cowboys bounce back and you know they're still going to be a really good team, but clearly they hadn't. You know, up to this point, they haven't turned it on. Offensively, you know, got a lot of work to do offensively when they've got the ball. Defensively, they had been very, very strong until last week. Not that they were awful, but they certainly weren't as dominant as they had been in the first couple of weeks. They lost Trayvon Diggs, and that's obviously a big loss to the way that they structure up. But I imagine that Dallas kind of steps it up again and comes back to being a really good team in that conference. Obviously I loved it, but I imagine, you know, that every team, it's a very, very even league. And I think every team is going to have one or two of those games that they nearly drop or drop that they shouldn't, according to names, who's out there, standings, win-loss record, etc. And maybe this is the one. Maybe this is the Cowboys' one for the season. Maybe it snowballs into a few more over the next month, and we can only hope. But, you know, I imagine that the Cowboys are good enough that they turn it around pretty quickly. And speaking of turning things around really quickly, the Green Bay Packers, will the real Green Bay Packers please stand up? What the fuck was that first half? And then what the fuck happened in the second half? Did you watch that game?
I saw when they were 17-0 down, thinking it was going swimmingly to plan, as I both of us, I think, were both keen on the Saints to win that game, and as a bit of an outsider, and I thought, yeah, here we go. That's a handy one to pick up in all my tipping comps that I was bleeding after I saw the final score. I couldn't believe it. I think I must have I got up very early to watch most of my red zone and watch the games as I could, and I think I must have fallen back asleep before the fourth quarter, because I certainly didn't see that coming. I reckon I did see that field goal that kind of obviously kick-started the comeback, but yeah, look, what an effort by Jordan Love to come back and bring his team back to win. Another solid day. He did have an interception, but and only completed 50% of his passes. Derek Carr did get knocked out of the game, but goodness me, Jordan Love is just showing maturity beyond his years. Another really solid performance and a winning start for Green Bay. Their 11th straight home opening win. So the record was on their side, but yeah, he led the team in carries. In rushing yards. He got into the end zone as well with his feet. AJ Dillon is an absolute bust. I'm sorry for anyone that took him in fantasy this year. Thankfully, I wasn't one of them. But they look lost without Aaron Jones on that rush in the rushing kind of in the rushing part of the offense. But look, they're being led by this ridiculously young receiving core, and obviously Jordan Love himself is only about 23, 24, and been in the league 2 or 3 years and barely played. So it's an incredible effort what these young Packers are doing. And more injuries on defense, though, unfortunately. They lost another key troop this week. So they'll be up against it on a short turnaround against the Lions. But at Lambeau, they'll be confident of kind of snapping what's been a poor run against the Lions recently. But, yeah, can't wait for that game. It'll be a really good one. But I think the Packers are kind of there, and I think they have all the makings to be a playoff team this year, and if not a division winner. So I think they're legit, and the more they can get back and get healthy, the better. But, yeah, I think Jordan Love is showing a lot of people what he can do and why they were probably correct in selecting him when they did.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it surprised me a little bit. I wasn't really sure what to expect. Obviously, we'd only seen him, you know, a couple of snaps here and there. I think he'd started one game for Rodgers, maybe when he missed with COVID or something like that. But I really wasn't sure. But I was watching back some of that game, and there's just some things that you can tell watching him that he's picked up from Aaron Rodgers, watching him for the last 2 or 3 years in action. Just the way that he moves, he's got some composure that I hadn't seen from him before in that little opportunity that we'd had to see him. But just, you know, the way that they trust him to make plays, whether it's stepping back in the pocket and making plays with the arm or running the ball, which I don't think we'd seen before from Jordan Love. Like you said, 9 carries for 40 odd yards and a touchdown. I wasn't expecting that out of Jordan Love. Obviously, you know, it's not, you look at his stat line and you know, 259 yards, touchdown and an interception. Was not, you know, groundbreaking statistics, but you know, some of the plays that he made in the second half, you know, throwing the ball to Jaden Reed, to Romeo Doubs, etc., and just the composure to stay calm and make a play when it needed to be done was just really, really impressive. And so far, I think we've seen that step up defensively that I think, you know, we spoke about a number of times last season that we thought they had the talent to do, but never really put it together last year. And it looks like they're doing that more and more consistently so far this season. I know we're only a couple of weeks in, but they do look a much more solidified defensive unit. And, you know, it's I feel like if you're a Packers fan, then you'd be feeling pretty positive about what's to come. And I think, yeah, you're at right now are as good a shot as anyone to win that division. And you know, looking at where you're at and how you're playing, to at least be a wild card team come playoff time. But yeah, they could shock a few teams, I reckon, the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, they've been one of the surprise packets for me, especially to start the season. Again, they were one of those teams you kind of had to watch and see, because we weren't really sure how it all kind of worked, especially with just such a young group on offense in particular. But we know there's a lot of key pillars on defense, which we just didn't see kind of click last year. And I know we spoke about it at nauseam all through last year. We were waiting for the Packers D, who looked amazing on paper, to step up. But yeah, Rashawn Gray was the man who went down. He didn't go down. It was someone else went injured. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Alexander anyway. But they've got a few injury concerns, and that's kind of what's holding them back, if anything, at the moment. But yeah, looking forward to that Thursday night game. I think it's going to be a really good one.
Absolutely. As we look at a couple of the stat leaders so far, obviously three games in, and this has a lot of movement to come still, but Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson leading pass yards and receiving yards probably makes sense. And I think, you know, from a fantasy perspective, if you're able to get Justin Jefferson, you'd probably look to draft Kirk Cousins and have the 1-2 stack. But that makes as much sense as just about anything in the league that those two would be leading their respective categories. I think I'd be surprised if Kirk Cousins was still leading the passing yards come the end of the season. But yeah, anything's possible when you've got Justin Jettas there.
He's doing well to beat Tua at the moment. Well, he's only about 50 yards ahead, but it's still a fair effort the way the Miami offense is playing.
Very true, very true. Rushing yards, Christian McCaffrey, which I think is probably a little bit surprising, because I think historically, you know, he gets volume yardage because of how versatile he is, and he's able to do it on the ground, in the air, and in a number of ways. But are you surprised to see him leading the rushing title at this stage?
Yes and no. I don't think he would be if, you know, we had a healthy Nick Chubb. Mm. Who, sorry to bring that up, but yeah, look, I think
pulling out for Nick Chubb and his knees.
He's been incredible since going to San Francisco. It's been a perfect fit for him, and to see him healthy again, which has been obviously a big major part of his, you know, he's been a big liability for many fantasy teams and for the league in general, to the fact he's been barely on the park in his last couple of seasons in Carolina. But yeah, look, obviously in that scheme with Kyle Shanahan, not his dad, 353 yards over the first 3 weeks. And he's scored a touchdown in every game this season, which has taken his streak to 12 consecutive games, which is an incredible feat for, I know he's just an unbelievable player, but 12 straight games to score a touchdown's pretty damn impressive. And he leads the rushing yards over at the moment DeAndre Swift, who has essentially only played two games, mate. Like he wasn't even used in week one. And the fact he's got over 300 yards in the last 2 weeks has been incredible. So what a fit he's been into that Philly offense, who, you know, I know we haven't spoken about in a little bit, but while we segue there quickly, any concerns over the passing game and Jalen Hurts at the moment with that, or are we just kind of riding it 1 week at a time, and 3-0 looks pretty damn good?
Oh, look, I think, like I said last week, it's one of those things where there's two ways to look at it. Yes, that offense is potentially not performing up to the level that, you know, we know that they can, but on the flip side, they're 3-0 and the offense isn't performing up to the level that we know they can. I think they'll get it right. Watching the offensive line go to work last week was just a thing of beauty. Looking at the gaps that they were able to create, the space that DeAndre Swift has had over the last couple of weeks. I mean, it's just, they're so good. They are so good, that offensive line. And it's only a matter of time before Jalen Hurts gets it together. We spoke last week, you know, the one thing that I wanted to see was getting AJ Brown more involved. And he had a big game. He was more involved and had a big impact. So I think it's just piece by piece, step by step for the Eagles. And yeah, right now, just keep winning. Just keep winning and things will come together, because a little bit like I said for Josh Allen earlier, they're too good. They're too good for them not to put it together. And Jalen Hurts is too good. He hasn't been poor by any stretch. That's the other thing, is that he's poor by the MVP caliber standard we saw last year. But yeah, there's probably 15, 18, 20 other franchises that would take this version of Jalen Hurts if they could. So look, I think more good things are coming. I wanted to ask you about DeAndre Swift and after the last couple of weeks, because obviously there's been a lot of talk about this kind of running back by committee in Philly and DeAndre Swift and Kenneth Gainwell and Boston Scott, Rashad Penny, and how they're each going to have their day in the sun and, you know, ride the hot hand and whatever. Do you think DeAndre Swift has kind of put that to bed over the last fortnight?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's unfortunately for Kenneth Gainwell, who had a, you know, kind of led the backfield in week one and then kind of hurt himself, he opened the door for DeAndre Swift to come in and Swift has taken it with both hands. And, you know, we know he was going to be used more as the season went on. So he wasn't always kind of going to be that backup to Gainwell. But I think the fact that they, like you said, they just ride that hot hand at the moment, I think, like I said, he's been a perfect kind of addition to that offense. And we know he's got playmaking abilities when he catches the ball. We haven't even seen him really as a pass catcher yet this much this year. So why wouldn't you just keep running the hot hand? I think that's probably the order. You've got it right there. Rashad Penny is almost like a non-factor at this stage, but you've got Swift with Gainwell backing him up with Boston Scott for some special plays and some, you know, third downs. And
oh, they just bring Jalen Hurts. They bring Boston Scott out. They wheel Boston Scott out for the two games against the Giants, and that's about it.
The Giants was going to, he'll score a couple of touchdowns against the Giants. So Commanders this week. Division game, maybe he gets on the board there. But look, I think, DeAndre Swift's the one you got to ride going forward. And then, of course, Jalen Hurts can get a bit busier with his legs as well. So we know that you guys are well stocked there.
Yeah, spot on. Well said, I think. But, moving on to some of the other categories, TJ Watt, unsurprisingly, I think leading the league in sacks. It is amazing that after 3 weeks, you know, you look at someone like Myles Garrett, who we just spoke about, who had 3.5 sacks in week three, to not be leading that category after 3 weeks. TJ Watt has 6. And I think I'm awful at maths. I'm terrible at maths, but I feel like that is on pace for 36 sacks for a season, which
34.
There you go. Told you I was terrible at maths, but close enough. Either way, probably unrealistic, but you know, well on pace to demolish the single season.
Let's set the bar at him at 34.
Let's 28. Let's have a slow rest of the season for TJ Watt. Just cruise home. But look, I mean that single season sack record is what, 22.5, 25, something like that. So well on the way there. Tackles. Zaire Franklin, 45 tackles after a couple of weeks from Indy. And then interceptions, Jordan Whitehead and Jesse Bates the third, both with 3 after 3 weeks. Jordan Whitehead had 3 in a game, didn't he?
Week one, he had three against Josh Allen, yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, look, I think in most of these categories there's going to be a bit of movement. Hopefully TJ Watt stays well ahead of the rest for the rest of the season. We mentioned our power rankings, and last week, Ryan, you put a power of effort into the power rankings, and this week it's been my turn to try and one up you or go on better. But I'm not sure how I've done, but I think we're probably, I don't know. Would you say we're on the same page with having San Francisco still at number one?
Yeah, I think San Francisco are still the clear number one in the league. I know Miami have been the most explosive, but I think all round, again, the San Francisco 49ers, no one has looked close to beating them yet this season. And I think that'll continue into week four, and I think they'll be up in the number one or two spot for the rest of the season. To be honest, I don't see them kind of falling off a cliff. They're very unlikely to do what they did. Dallas did against Arizona this week, so be very interesting to see how the Cardinals come out and attack that game. But I think the Niners are the undisputed number one team in the league at the moment.
Agreed. The one question mark about the Niners, and I think where a lot of people are kind of unsure about them, is that they just haven't been as dominant as people expected them to be. And a little bit, you know, like the Eagles, they just keep winning. And we know that they've got another gear to go to as well, which is probably a little bit scary for the rest of the league. But I've moved Miami up to number two, and I think that you had a couple of question marks about this one. But I just feel like they can get better defensively. We know that, you know, they're not that strong defensively, but I feel like they are going to get better defensively because they do have some talent there on the defensive end. But offensively, they are just so dynamic, so versatile, so flexible. They can run, they can throw, they can catch, they can do anything on the ground or in the air. And, you know, just looking at the matchup this week, it's going to be really interesting to see if one of the two or three best defenses in the comp can keep them to, I don't know, what's a pass mark for the Bills D this week? Is it 30 points? Is it 28? Like, what's a pass mark for the Bills D this week?
It's a great question. I think they can keep the Dolphins to three touchdowns. They've done well. And, you know, I think they've got enough firepower of their own to win a game if they, you know, 28-21 or something along those lines, but, or 24-21 might be enough. But I think they'll have to score more than that. I think it'll be a bit of a track meet. I do think, I don't know what the over and unders say, but I've got it kind of up towards the 34-31 kind of score line or somewhere in that vicinity. So, yeah, I think it'll be a tight one, and it'll be both teams will be in the 30s, which will be a very exciting game.
53.5.
Yeah, so you'd be taking that overs every day of the week. I think 60 looks like an easy one to get in that one. But, yeah, you know, I know they've been a bit more dour, these two teams, recently, and the Bills have owned the Dolphins in recent years. So very interested to see kind of how it all plays out. But, yeah, I can see why you've got them number two. And, yeah, very interested to see if the Bills can win. Does that put them kind of back in the top three and see if they can kind of make a move?
Yeah, I just they remind me a little bit of, if you go back kind of 4 or 5 years to the Chiefs, and we know defensively they were not great. It almost didn't matter because they were going to put 35 or 40 on you each week. And if you do that, you're going to win. You're going to win most weeks, and I feel like that's kind of where the Dolphins are at the moment. That just go out and score more than the opposition, and you know, historically, I'm going to give you a breakthrough statistic now. But historically, Ryan, teams that score more than the opposition win games 100% of the time.
100% of the time is a good
100%
stat.
Of the time, teams that score more than the other team win. So that's why I've got Miami at number two, ahead of my Eagles at number three. And that was a tough decision. But look, 3-0. And like I said before, 3-0 and not playing incredibly well. I'll take it. I think that there's another gear or three that they can step up. But look, promising start, even though it has felt a bit rusty, a bit sluggish, a bit lethargic. But how do you feel about those two? And I think you mentioned off air just before that you probably would have had them the other way around. But
yeah, look, I can't argue with the logic and what you've said there and why you've got Miami slightly ahead of Philly. I think from my point of view, and as I mentioned off air to you, was that I'd probably still have Philly at number two. I don't see why the Dolphins should leapfrog them just on the back that they've both won three games. Yes, I know they did just score 70 points, but they have played who have they played? They've played the Chargers, who we know are really poor on offense. They've played the Broncos, which we saw last week. And who did they play in the middle? I've already forgotten who they played in week two. Might have been the Jets. Was it the Jets? No, it wasn't the Jets. Anyway, they haven't played anyone of note for mine, and I think Philly, on the contrary, probably haven't either, but I think Philly's upside is much higher, and I think runs on the board has got Philly ahead of Miami at this stage. But it's very hard to argue with why you'd have the Dolphins ahead of the Eagles. I think they're flip of the coin, and they're definitely the top three teams and the only underrated teams in the competition. So there you go.
There you go indeed. Now, for the next couple of spots, 4, 5, and 6, probably teams that we expected to be in the top couple all season. Order as it stands for mine, In number four, the Kansas City Chiefs. In position number five, the Buffalo Bills. And position six, big slider from number two last week, the Dallas Cowboys, after that disappointing loss to the Cardinals. What are your thoughts there and any movement on your side?
No, absolutely no arguments here. I think the Chiefs are clearly the next rung down, and I know it's weird to say that, but yeah, they're clearly, I think, the best 2-1 team at the moment in the comp. So that's the number four and stayed where they were from last week. And I think the Bills, as you mentioned, they have every right to jump the Cowboys after that really, really poor effort by the Cowboys on the weekend. So I think the top six are kind of the key six at the moment. I think they look a little bit of a classier kind of bunch over what's below them here coming forward. And although I do think these Detroit Lions, especially if they can get on the road here and beat Green Bay on Thursday night and improve to 3-1, I think they're right in the conversation to be, you know, NFC Smokies. I think they can, I mean, they've got a long way to go to catch up to the Niners and the Eagles for mine, but, you know, the season's a long one. There's a lot of time between now and January where things can change. But I do think the Lions are a sneaky NFC championship hope. I think they can get all the way to the NFC championship game.
Well, speaking of the Detroit Lions, they are in the next spot. In spot number seven, so he moved up from eight last week. I thought that was either a very, very clever segue from you or completely ignorant, which you never know from a guy who flip-flops teams every year. But they are your de facto team this year, aren't they?
Lions Bills Super Bowl. I can see that.
But no, look, I think you're right. I think the Lions have shown further growth and we kind of expected that, and it's been pleasing to see. I think they've got probably another gear that they can go to. I did want to make mention of a couple of off-season decisions, which, you know, look, the Lions are doing all the right things, I think, but there were a couple of things that they might be looking at. I don't know. With maybe a little bit of hindsight, but they traded away from Jalen Carter, for example, to take Jahmyr Gibbs, and then traded out DeAndre Swift to the Eagles, who had drafted Jalen Carter. I wonder what that Detroit Lions offense looks like with DeAndre Swift, and I wonder what they look like with Jalen Carter there as well.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because I think, you know, Jalen Carter's already proved in his first three games that he's going to be a very good player and a key contributor on that a stacked defense. So, yeah, I mean, they're obviously really high on Gibbs, and they had to be to kind of move up to get him and shift some pieces around to make him essentially RB1. I know they brought in David Montgomery, but we knew that was only going to be until Gibbs kind of found his feet. We knew he was going to be their bell cow going forward later in the season. So, yeah, very interesting. It's a great point you make, because, you know, they could have, you know, DeAndre Swift has been explosive in the first 3 weeks, or, you know, especially the last 2 weeks. And then to add a guy like Jalen Carter on that pretty, you know, pretty decent defense. Yeah, maybe we're having a different conversation. Maybe they're, you know, higher in the power ranking. So, look, they did still go to Kansas City and beat them in week one. So it's a nice notch on their belt. They now get to go to Lambeau to face their very old foes in Green Bay, who we know are no easy beat. So, yeah, like I said a couple of times, we're really looking forward to Thursday night and seeing where that kind of leaves us with both of those football teams, actually.
Coming up next and rounding out the top 10, three teams who know each other pretty well: the Cleveland Browns, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Cincinnati Bengals. 2-1, 2-1, and 1-2. But thoughts on those three?
Well, if you keep going a little bit further, you've got the fourth AFC North team there.
Very true. Very true.
You've got the Steelers and 11, which just shows you the strength of that division. It always is a strong division, the AFC North. And look, I think for now you've got that spot on. I think the Browns are the number one seed in that division, and overall number eight, you've got them, and it's a good jump for the Browns, who kind of regressed obviously in week two with that really poor offensive showing. But we just saw again how lethal that defense can be, and completely shut out a second team in 3 weeks. So they're deserving of that number eight spot. Deshaun Watson looked a lot better this week. Jerome Ford kind of, he looked good when he came in for Nick Chubb against the Steelers and kind of continued on that form against the Titans. So, and this is the thing with the Ravens, who are the sliders from down to nine. This is why I don't think either of us were very bullish on the Ravens, because they can throw in some games like this, and it's a really bad loss to lose to Indy at home. A really, really bad loss, especially after a week after they just looked like they got into gear on offense. Lamar Jackson looked like an MVP again, and then they just kind of like, just couldn't get it done against, you know, a Colts team that have shown a bit so far, to be honest, this season. So, yeah, that was a bad loss. And while they're still 2-1, they're ahead of the Bengals. But I saw some good signs from the Bengals on Monday night. And I know Joe Burrow doesn't look exactly healthy yet, which is still a very big concern for me. But, yeah, that Bengals defense finally came alive in that second half. And Jamar Chase, you feed that man and good things happen. So, look, I think the Bengals can click it into gear pretty quickly.
To round out the top 12, the Green Bay Packers at 2-1, making their first appearance in the power rankings for the season. Mm. We spoke a bit about the Packers earlier, and I think that's about right for them. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they probably halved that distance close to the top if things continue in the trend that they're heading in.
Yeah, they're definitely a top 10 team if they can win on Thursday night. And if not, yeah, even a top 8, potentially top 6, depending on what they can do. And I think they're well within their right to be in the top 12 in our power rankings now. And obviously they lost week 2, but they probably should have won that game. Could have easily been 3-0. And it's probably the one reason we didn't have them in our top 12 last week is obviously because they did lose that game. But and they only beat the Bears week 1. But I think they've shown they're a good football team and deserving of a top 12 spot, which has left a couple of teams like the Saints and the Commanders dropping out. And the big drop, who we had there last week at number 9, is the Jags. And the less said about them, the better at the moment. That was a putrid loss, I should say, after I pretty much guaranteed them to win the AFC South last week. And I'm a little bit nervous now.
Well, look, I think we are still very early in the season. I think there is... You know, through this period, there is going to be a lot of movement, you know, from the teams down from here, spots kind of 13 to 25 or whatever in the end. But going from the bottom, we've both got the Chicago Bears in dead last.
Yep, have to be the worst team in football by a fair stretch. And I was kind of shocked that you put this team at 31 and it's the team they played this week.
Yes. Yes, I was too. But any team that gets beaten by 70 points or concedes 70 points is not a very good football team. And right now, the Denver Broncos are not a very good football team. And, you know, we spoke about them a fair bit earlier. But very, very disappointing start to the year for Broncos fans, for Sean Payton. And they've got a lot of work to do to turn it around.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Very, very interesting on locker this week with those two teams playing against each other. But what a disaster it's been for Sean Payton and the Broncos to start the season. And then down in 30th, mate, another winless team in the Panthers, which are, you know, have probably been knocking on the door for this bottom three to be featured in our power rankings, and they've made it this week. So yeah, can see why we've got them down that far. And after the Cardinals and Texans both had surprising wins last week.
That's right. Yeah, look, I thought the Panthers acquitted themselves all right last week, but yeah, if you're 0-3, yeah, you're going to struggle. We know that. We spoke about it earlier. So that just about wraps up the power rankings. I was hoping that we were going to be done in about an hour for this podcast, and we're not quite there. But if we whip through kind of some of the games coming up. Week 4, there's quite a few kind of good games in this this week. Are there any in particular that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I'll sound like a broken record, but yeah, definitely Thursday night, the Packers and the Lions, for all the reasons we've mentioned, we probably don't need to go into it too much now. But yeah, looking forward to seeing that NFC North battle. It'll probably give us a really good idea about who's going to come out of that division on top and really give a good insight, especially into the Packers, I think, who are still a little bit of an unknown quantity with that young kind of core and, of course, a few key injuries. And then the other ones I thought for me were focused around the Ravens and the Browns, especially that, again, an all kind of division matchup, especially to see what the Browns defense can do against Lamar and what they did showed up last week. But, yeah, I think that's going to be a really interesting one. And then the key, obviously the key game of the round for me is Dolphins and Bills.
Absolutely. I mean, matchup of the week by a long way. I guess just to talk quickly through those, I think we can start giving – we're not going to do a whole bunch of betting or tipping or whatever on this show moving forward, but tips for those couple of games. I think the Packers win at Lambeau. I think the Browns and that defense, that run defense against the Ravens run game, I think – Cleveland will get on top and kill that. And I think the Bills at home and defensively, this is the biggest test, as we've mentioned, for the Dolphins that they've seen so far. And yeah, really looking forward to this one. But I think in this one in Buffalo, the defense gets up and we know that they've got the firepower to hurt Miami going back the other way as well. But any others that you're looking forward to?
The other one I wanted to kind of make mention of, and before we quickly mention the two winless teams or the four winless teams matching up against each other, which is a bit of an anomaly that
yeah, look quirky.
They both play each other this week, the two teams play each other this week. You know what I'm trying to say? It's very.
I know what you're saying. The four winless teams matching up in week four.
Yeah, well said. This is why you're the man with the mic and the host now. Anyway, the Pats and the Cowboys I thought was a really interesting one just for the fact that what did Dallas do coming off that loss against Arizona? They now come up against one of the best defenses in the league in New England. They're back at home, but the Patriots are kind of would be setting themselves for this one. I know they obviously got back on the winner sheet this week in week three and they were pretty poor against the Jets, to be honest. The Jets almost kind of knocked them off even with that Hail Mary at the end. But yeah, I don't know, I've got the Pats being a bit of a sneaky chance against the Cowboys, especially if the same Dallas team rocks up as they did last week. But that'd be very interesting and a big shake up to the NFC if the Pats can go into Dallas and knock them off.
It'd be huge, wouldn't it? But also I think for the Pats, I mean, we know how competitive that division's going to be. But if the Pats can sneak a few of the games that they're not expected to win, then yeah, as long as they keep beating the teams that they are expected to beat or stay competitive in those games, then yeah, maybe they could be thereabouts come wild card time as well. It is a really interesting. Kind of week of games, but you mentioned at the top of the show that we've got a new segment, and I just thought it would be a little bit different for us to, I guess, dig into the take bag, and I don't think anything here kind of really needs too much analysis or thought or explanation, but just a couple of things that maybe jump out at us. It might be a hot take, it might be a controversial opinion, or whatever, just a feeling or a stat that you like, but just something that you wanted to kind of raise as a, I don't know, just something to leave out there on the podcast in the ether for the week. Yeah. But this is the take bag. And my first one is that New Orleans should use Rashid Shaheed like Cordarrelle Patterson has been used, kind of that Swiss Army knife, use him in the running game, use him as a returner, which they did on the weekend, use him in the passing game, obviously Hail Marys and that sort of stuff. But just get him involved because every time he touches the ball, something happens. and they could do worse than getting Rashid Shaheed more involved in their offensive game.
Yeah, he definitely needs to be more involved. He's a super uber talented guy, and I think you know, the fact that he didn't even get a catch on the weekend showed that they're not using him enough. And I know Derek Carr had barely any passing yards and he got knocked out of the game, but that offense just wasn't kind of clicking, or that passing game wasn't clicking at all on the weekend. So, look, I think you're right. I think they need to use him more. He's a deep distance threat, and he can be used in any position, I think. And while Kamara's been out, they haven't used him enough probably in those jet sweeps and in the running game, but it might change now with Alvin Kamara coming back for this week. So we'll see, but completely agree with that take.
That is one that we've got to look forward to next week, kind of looking at how they use Alvin Kamara coming back and what that New Orleans offense looks like. I guess with their superstar, can you still call in their superstar coming back? I don't know, but
yeah, I don't know if he's quite that superstar anymore. Yeah. But here.
What's your first entry into the take bag?
Well, my take bag is probably nothing too new, and I know we've discussed it a little bit, but especially after what we saw on the weekend, I think CJ Stroud is an absolute baller, and they've missed a trick there, Chicago. They traded down the number one pick. They could have taken CJ Stroud, started afresh with that franchise, gone a different direction. Completely understand why they didn't, but Justin Fields looks like he's regressed badly, and that passing game is non-existent in Chicago. It seems like they can't run the ball either anymore, so they've lost that identity. So it's a really disappointing time to be a Chicago Bears fan, especially when a guy that they could have had and taken as your quarterback of the future has been playing so well. With it, you know, he's got an offense that, you know, has barely got any receivers to throw to, but he's made it work and he's putting up some crazy numbers and would comfortably be leading offensive rookie of the year at the moment so far. So CJ Stroud for me. Well, actually, Bijan Robinson as well has probably got something to say about that. But CJ Stroud's been unbelievable to start the season, and I think he looks like a genuine star of the future. I know it's only three games in, but to take bags, so we want these hot takes, and I think the Chicago Bears have missed a trick there by not drafting him and going in that Justin Fields direction. So,
yeah, no, I like it. I like it. I picked up CJ Stroud in our fantasy league 2 weeks ago.
And, yeah, you went big in that league this week, didn't you?
I did. We can talk about
The one we're co-managing, we're dominating as well.
We are doing quite well in fantasy. But, picked up CJ Stroud a couple of weeks ago. I haven't played him, actually, because I've been waiting for Justin Fields to kind of take off. It hasn't happened yet, and I'm teetering on the edge of playing CJ Stroud this week. I'm just still undecided, but we'll see.
Well, Fields is going to have a good day.
Yes.
Fields is going to have a good day. It's this week against Denver. So
that's right. That's right. My next take bag, my next take out of the bag is that only five teams after 3 weeks are top 10 in both offensive and defensive DVOA. That is the 49ers, the Bills, the Eagles, and the Chiefs, who, if I scroll up in the page, are the top four in our power rankings. And then surprisingly, the Green Bay Packers, which I think just goes to show that improvement on both sides of the ball that we spoke about earlier. And that just quietly, the Packers are doing the right things to get them into a position where, you know, we can talk about them as division winners again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good stat, and I know DVOA is always a really good indicator about who's, you know, performing well, which teams are on the right track. So for the Packers to be included in that company, which is elite company and arguably the best four teams over the past couple of years, that's for sure. So yeah, absolute elite company for Jordan Love and his team. My final take, mate.
This is a big take.
I know, especially after you've told me how good the Browns are. I think, and I don't know what the odds are. I was just having a quick scan to see if I could find a division winner market for the AFC North. But if they're not favorites, which they still could very well be, I still think the Bengals win the AFC North. They're not. They're actually third favorite. 425. There you go. Ooh, I think that is delicious value. I think the Bengals still win the AFC North. They were 0-2 last year. They ended up winning the division by 2.5 games. It could have been 3 if they played the whole schedule. They finished 12-4. Baltimore finished 10-7. So I think the Bengals will click into gear. I thought, like I said, I saw some really positive signs from them in the second half. They barely gave Matthew Stafford a look. They were all over him. If not for a couple of penalties, they would have had more interceptions and more sacks. I think they were just completely dominant in that second half, that defense. And if Joe Burrow can stay healthy, he can keep his calf somewhat fine, and that was the issue. I still think he's carrying that injury. I'm not sure when their bye week is, but hopefully for him it'll be sooner rather than later. But I still think the Bengals are the clear class of the division, and I trust them more than any of the other teams, and I think they still win the AFC North from here.
I'll tell you what, there is a lot of value in that division from top to bottom. Like the only one that I feel like there's no value in is in the favorite with the Baltimore Ravens at $2.60. When you look at the rest of that division and the Browns at $3.25 and then the Bengals and the Steelers at $4.50 each, any of those four teams could win the division the way the season has started. And yet the Steelers, based on their defense, could win the division. If they steal a couple of games here and there, they've got playmakers on defense, and we know historically they've always been a good defensive team, and they've won the division off the back of defense a number of times. The Browns, as we've spoken to, probably the best defense in the league at the moment, and they're second favorite, $3.25 to win the division, at 2-1. The Bengals, like you said, the clear class, at least offensively, but I think defensively they've improved as well. For them to be kind of equal third or equal last, whichever way you want to put it, at $4.50, there's clear value there. So if you like almost anyone other than the Ravens to win that division, then there's a heap of value to play with. That's I actually didn't expect that, to be honest.
No. Well, I just had a quick look, and you can get almost 50-1 or just under 50-1, and definitely more than that if you have all the boosters and things like that. But 50-1, let's say, for the Jags, who I still think is an absolute lock, the Bengals, the Chiefs, the Eagles, the Saints, and the Niners to all win their divisions from here. That just seems like unbelievable value. I might have to go shopping tomorrow, but look, the only divisions I'm leaving out there is the AFC East and the NFC North, who I think are genuine coin flips at this stage. So, but yeah, look, Jags, Chiefs, Bengals, Eagles, Niners, Saints for me. That's it's pretty tempting.
Have a play. Cheeky little pineapple. Go for it.
I need to come over to Philly with you, so we need to break the load up.
I like it, mate. That's a good way to finish the show. But if we missed anything, if you want to hear something in particular, if you think we got something wrong, let us know. We're on Twitter at Punt Return Pod, at Nick Splitter, at Ryan Lepore. We're on Instagram at NFL Podcast, or on Facebook at the Punt Return Podcast. Leave us a review, feedback or whatever on the review platforms, on Facebook, on iTunes or Spotify, whatever it is. We'd really appreciate it. We love hearing from you guys. But let us know. Let us know if we missed something, if we got something wrong, or if you want to hear something in particular, if you've got a question, if you want us to look at something in particular, let us know, and we'll get back to you next week. But appreciate your listening as always. And if you're an AFL fan, go Pies or go Lions.
Pies.
If you're an NRL fan, go Broncos or Panthers. Probably not the Panthers because they've already won enough. And probably not the Broncos either because they've won enough.
Not like the Broncos either. So, it's a hard one for me. But as long as the Pies win, I don't care what happens.
You'll be well over it by Sunday night, I would have imagined, regardless of the results on Saturday night.
Only one way I'll be. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see.
Gamble responsibly and drink responsibly. But, mate, enjoy grand final weekend. Enjoy what should be a fantastic weekend of football all around. And I'll catch up with you again next week.
Sounds good. And don't forget, The alarms can be set at 4 a.m. this week with daylight savings. Ooh, so thankfully we get an extra hour of sleep before we get to wake up to some NFL action on Monday morning.
Good reminder. Good memory from you, mate. Thank you for that. As always,
go Bills.
Go Bills.